Hello, and welcome to Syngenta Growing Golf, the podcast about tomorrow's golf industry today. My name is Gary Firkins, and I'm your host. Today, we're talking about how golf can reach new, untapped audiences. I'll be speaking to Amir Malik, founder of the Muslim Golf Association, and Alistair Spink, head coach of Love.Golf. Amir and Alistair have been working together to introduce golf to Muslim women in towns and cities across the UK. In this episode, we find out why the project has been a success and what the business opportunity is for golf clubs and courses. As always, we'd love to hear your thoughts, comments and questions, so please do join the conversation at syngentagolf.com or via Twitter and LinkedIn. Enjoy the show. Amir Malik and Alistair Spink, welcome to Syngenta Growing Golf. Before we get into the conversation and the story of how Love.Golf and the Muslim Golf Association have been working together, delivering experiences for over 500 new golfers, Muslim women, let's first just hear a little bit about you and your backgrounds. And Amir, let's start with you. Tell me a little bit about your kind of growing up. Was it a sporting household? When did you first become aware of golf?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Gary. Absolute honour and privilege to be here and just be able to give a small insight about our story. And again, it's always a pleasure to be with Alistair. I guess I grew up very much in a sporting household. So I am the youngest of four siblings. I have two older brothers and an older sister. I'd like to think I'm the special one because there's about 15 years age difference between me and my next brother or my next sibling. But yeah, very much grew up playing a lot of sport. Cricket, I vividly remember because my brothers were very much avid cricketers. And so, you know, I spent hours just bowling to them and then chasing and getting the ball back and whatnot. So I remember those were very much my early memories itself. And then to be fair, my brothers used to play a lot of sport, used to play football, tennis. And so whatever equipment I could find in the house, I would just grab and gravitate towards it. And so I've always liked to think I've grown up with sport and a ball in its hand. But unfortunately, my parents passed away when I was 14 and 15. And so I had to grow up very quickly, I guess. And my brothers were very much in their sort of early 30s and whatnot. And I guess life took a very different toll. And so my upbringing changed and wasn't atypical to what it would have been for a normal teenager. But sport was always my constant, I guess, within that. And
were you aware of golf at this time, Amir? Was golf on your radar at all? Was there a local golf course that you looked at and thought, what's that all about?
Not at all. I think I used to actually go past a golf club on the bus to school. In fact, I remember there were a couple of kids at school who used to caddy at the golf club, and they used to get, I think, £10 or something. And back then, that was a lot of money. And so that's how they used to earn their pocket money. But no, never went on to golf course. I never knew anyone that played golf in my family, in my close circle of friends. Never. And in fact, even when I was playing cricket, I mean, I got to play when I was about 11, 12 years old to district level. And then when I went to secondary school, that was one sport they didn't really play. I played a lot of football and rugby. But there was this really well-to-do cricket club called Maldon Wanderers, actually. And it had this reputation that, you know, you had to be really, really good to go and play there. And I never dared go because you just thought, nah, it's not going to be for me, funnily enough. And then one day, I think we saw an advert in the newspaper saying they were going to have trials. So a couple of friends of us got together. We went down and we started playing. And then you very quickly realized that actually you're not that bad. And then before you know it, you know, I was hooked on cricket. And the next sort of 6-7 years, you know, that was it. That was all I wanted to do.
So where did golf come into the picture? When did you first get the opportunity to see or experience golf?
Yeah, not until I was probably in my mid-20s. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was always aware of golf because you knew it was a sport. I saw it occasionally on TV, but I just never had access to it. But there was always a bit of a deep fascination into it because it's a sport with a ball and you just thought, I wonder. And it wasn't until my old boss actually decided, he was a Sikh man, and we were talking about it in an office, and he goes, have you ever played? I was like, no, I'd like to. He goes, well, look, why don't we go and play? And I jumped at the opportunity. And as you do, went out, bought a set of golf clubs, and, you know, you didn't want to look like an idiot. And we turned up, and I think it was at Enfield Golf Club where I went for my first round, because he lived in Enfield and back then I was living in sort of Southwest. So we played once there, and then, you know, he returned the favor and we played at Epsom Golf Club. But then I left that company. I then relocated to the Middle East and actually ended up playing golf once in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. And it was an oil field, pretty much, right? It was a brown field or whatever it was called, but you'd carry a small piece of turf, right? So we would go at 6 o'clock in the morning, as soon as the sun has risen, you're out there, and we would be going from hole to hole in our car. So a friend of mine had an SUV, so the clubs were in the back, and we would get out and you'd carry this piece of turf and you'd hit off it. But what's fascinating is that they weren't greens, they were browns, right? And they were all slightly elevated. And you could putt on it and you could see the line as to where it was going, and you do 18 holes and you'd finish by about just before midday and the sun was baking. But I didn't do that very often, and it was just the fact that we could.
And then coming back to the UK then, so did you took up golf, were you hooked? But also, what were you thinking at the time, that, you know, kind of, where do I play golf, you know, kind of, did you have any perceptions about golf as a clubby type sport? Was it somewhere that you thought you could go? You said you were introduced by a Sikh gentleman, but, you know, what were your feelings about golf and how you could participate at that time?
So when I got back, I thought, right, we've got to take this more seriously. And that's when, you know, I had a very good group of friends, but I was living in Luton now, but all my friends were around the Kingston and Croydon area. And so, you know, they slowly started getting into golf, and we almost did at the same sort of time. We went from a driving range to a pitch and putt to now playing on a real golf course. But I would always travel an hour and a half, 2 hours, literally every other weekend, just to go play with them, because that was my safe space. That was my comfort zone. And we would do that. And then that progressed to going on to holidays. And our group grew from 4 to about 12. And it was fascinating. But it wasn't until someone said to me, what's your handicap? And I said, well, I don't really have one. I think it would be 18, 19, whatever. And he said, well, you're not a proper golfer. And that really stung me. And I thought, well, what do you mean I'm not a proper golfer? I can hit the ball. We play golf. How am I not a golfer? Because you need a handicap. So how do you get one? And so back then you had to join a golf club. I joined my first golf club about just over 3 and a bit years ago. I got my first handicap and I got down to about 11. And I was like, what? How did I get 11? I had one good round and 2 really bad rounds, but they took your best round out of 3. And so, and then that's when, you know, the competition started, and the rest, they say, is history.
So that's you as a golf fan. We'll come back to the Muslim Golf Association, of which you're the founder, in a short while. But let's hear from Alistair. You're a PGA professional. You've been involved in golf throughout your working career. But tell us about Love.Golf. What is Love.Golf, and how did it start?
I mean, Love.Golf, in a simple terms, is empowering experiences for women to try golf. As our projects have evolved and changed, that objective, that description, has always stayed exactly the same. We've always tried to do things differently, but say fundamentally, it's just creating these experiences for women to play. But I'd coached for a number of years, gone through, you know, the normal kind of training, did a number of different roles. I was assistant, and then I was head pro, and then I ran a shop on behalf of a corporate, and then was general manager, then went back into coaching and had a bit of director of golf mixed in. So I kind of seen the industry from all angles, I guess, really. But the common theme that kind of linked all of those roles and venues together was that I was in a very much a male-dominated environment. I appreciate, you know, I am a male. I'm also within a family that has 3 boys. So my wife is the only female. And yet I never really saw anything kind of wrong or unusual about that, until just kind of one day, really, when I just thought, this can't be right. Why am I just surrounded by a group of men? Why? Where are all the women? And actually, where are all the families? And
this was at the golf club. You were observing.
This was at the golf club, yeah. And then actually then, well, where are all the girls? Why is it just all boys? So I just started to kind of, you know, that was something that just dawned on me, really. And, you know, I had to put my hands up and think I was part of that environment for, you know, a considerable amount of time and never questioned it. But then when I did question it, I just started to look around and spend a lot of time really just looking at sort of the range environment. I mean, I'm lucky. I'm based at a golf club that is renowned for being family friendly and open to all. And I was it just kind of stepped back and really just kind of looked at what was actually happening. And what I tended to see was at our range in particular, I would see families, and I would see, girls, younger women coming to the venue, but they would tend to always be with a guy. And it tended to be from a range scenario, the guy would hit shots. The daughter, the granddaughter, the wife, the female partner, whatever that relationship was, would generally just take a back seat. But then at some point would perhaps make the mistake even of thinking, can I have a go? And at that moment, the guy on the range that was hitting the balls all over the place all of a sudden transitioned into, like a tour coach, to be honest. And rather than just handing the golf club to the woman or the girl and saying, just have a go, he proceeded to tell her everything he knew. And you have to stand like this, and you have to grip the club like this, and this is where the left arm needs to be in the backswing, and you need to keep your head down through the ball, and just huge amounts of technical information. And inevitably, as I was just kind of watching, really, inevitably the end result was always the same, rather than the poor participant being able to enjoy this experience. It was just like just total overload of information. And generally the club was handed back, and her fears were kind of confirmed that golf was really difficult. It was going to take loads of time, and there was so much to learn. And I just saw that being repeated over and over again. And that magical moment was gone. And so a couple of things really kind of then occurred to me. And then this really then is what shaped love.golf from the outset, was that worryingly, do you know what? That's not far off how I coach.
That's what I wanted to ask you. I wonder if it made you kind of reflect on the way you coached yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, up until that point, I probably didn't do a great deal of reflecting as a coach. And then there it was right in front of me of, well, what I was just quite horrified to witness, I was actually really kind of doing the same thing when I coached, was that here was somebody. I wasn't really considering their previous experiences or what they knew or what they felt. I was just straight on in there with, well, this is what you need to know. So I was definitely seeing that being played out. And as a third person, it was quite concerning to me as a coach. And then secondly, really, was that, well, it's not how I learned to play. I learned to play and fell in love with golf through going out on the golf course and actually playing. And that's where those magical moments were happening. That's how most people are introduced to sport, through actually participating and trying. And yet these women, they never got that. They never got that far, because they were just submerged, suffocated with so much technical information that the opportunity to get on the golf course was just never, ever there.
So you were starting to think about the experience from a particular customer's perspective, and that particular customer, in this case, being a woman or a girl, female, their experience might not be the same one or the same experience that they want as perhaps a man. So tell me, how did you start to shape the love.golf experience, an experience that is designed for women?
Yeah, well, I think from that moment, really, and like you said, it was this kind of just hit me very quickly that actually I'd coached for X number of years without really giving any consideration to what the customer felt or what the customer saw. And certainly from a love.golf perspective, when I wanted to take it forward, I didn't want to then fall back into that trap by thinking, well, I'll create something and this is what I know is best. So I really wanted from the outset to create a project that was very different. It would be ground in insight from customers, and in this case, from women. Because what gives me the right to think I know what it's like to walk into the golf club as a female, and certainly as a new female golfer? I can't ever walk in their shoes. So it was really important from the outset to have a way of learning about their experiences and looking through their lens rather than mine.
So love.golf became this insights-led experience. It was supported by market research, and it was supported by Syngenta, who came in to help develop the business with you. And since then, it's grown. You have more and more coaches now that you've taught how to coach the love.golf experience. very much focused on getting straight out there on the golf course and learning through play and learning together with the coach almost taking something of a back seat rather than that kind of very hands-on kind of interjection. It's letting the women kind of learn together as a group, and that the Syngenta research highlighted the sorts of experiences that women were actually looking for, which, you know, as we said earlier, are different to men. Let's fast forward now. Amir, you founded the Muslim Golf Association. You took your passion for golf and founded the Muslim Golf Association and are looking to introduce golf to as many Muslim men and women as possible. And you were already doing some events for men, which were taking off. But then you were thinking, I believe, that actually, well, how do I introduce golf to Muslim women and to families? And is that how you discovered Love.Golf? Tell us about how the two of you met and really kind of what those initial conversations were about introducing golf to Muslim women.
As you said, something that was a passion of mine, I wanted to share it with the world. You know, I absolutely fell in love with this game. I just thought, I really wish I'd grown up playing this game. And, you know, I thought I wasted all my time playing cricket. I just wish I could have played golf when I was a youngster. But there were also some things and the ugly side to golf, which I didn't like. And I thought, well, actually, golf doesn't need to revolve around that. And we could set it on just some very key basic values where I didn't think you needed alcohol to be involved in the game of golf or gambling. And as a Muslim, I pray 5 times a day. And especially in the winter, you'll find that 2-3 prayers would come into play. So it was all about just creating a safe environment. And so then that accelerated where we started doing events for the men. And the appetite was just incredible. We had people from Scotland and all the way down to Exeter and everywhere in between just coming together on the same platform and just being able to be comfortable, be safe, and just express themselves. And they really, really enjoyed it. And so we started doing tournaments, and that was great. But we've now created a platform for the men. Brilliant. When I looked at women in particular, I was inspired very much by my wife. You know, as I said, sport's always been a big part of my upbringing and my family. My son is a sports fanatic. And yet when we looked at my wife, and I just thought, why is it that you don't play sports? And it's not because she doesn't want to. It came down to accessibility. So when I looked at the different sports that she could have access to, when you look at swimming, she could only go swimming at a particular center on a particular day at a particular time. If for whatever reason you missed that session, you had to wait till the next one. So that didn't really work. When we looked at football and cricket and rugby, they just weren't conducive. You had to change your attire, and it was very, very difficult. And so I was inspired by a video I saw on TikTok where there was a woman in a white wedding dress swinging a golf club. And she didn't look comfortable, but she did it, and she did it pretty well. And I thought, well, if she could do it, if we could take the most conservative Muslim woman, and let's take someone who's wearing a niqab and a abaya, gloves, and the only thing you could see would be her eyes, could she swing a golf club? And the answer was damn right. However, I was acutely aware that I'm not a professional. I'm not a coach. And however, there is a method to this game, and it does need to be taught. But at the same time, you know, I've had a couple of lessons. And whenever you speak to a lot of guys, they would go and have one or two lessons, but no one would ever stick with their coaches, and they would always end up falling apart. And I was just like, okay, you have to learn this game, but why there's a disconnect? And I thought, if I want to introduce this game to Muslim women, we've got to realize that it's an alien game to them, right? They would have never had any connection, because if my upbringing is anything to go by, you know, they wouldn't even dream of playing golf. So I was looking for a partner or an organization that would understand the sensitivities of Muslim women, that would make the game fun, would make it inclusive, and just teach it in a really different way. And that's when I was very, very fortunate enough to be introduced to Alistair. And when I got to meet Alistair, I think the first meeting was, we were just talking about each other, where we'd come from and what Alistair was doing. And when I heard about his methodology, his theory, and his take on golf, I thought, that's it. That's exactly it. If I was to do it in any way, that's how I would like to do it. So I said, Alistair, I think we could take this to the Muslim community. And to Alistair, this was, again, well, like very new ground. And deep down, I was very excited, because I thought, if we get this right, and from my experience, no one had done this before, this could either just go in immensely crazy, or it could just fall flat on its face. But we've got to try. Okay. And if the men are anything to go by, I think they could be, I was quietly confident. And then he told me that he had this great coach whose name's Hannah, and she would be absolutely perfect. and now confession, I'd never met Hannah, but I'd built a relationship with Alistair where there was very much built on trust. And he said, Amir, she would be absolutely perfect for this. And she was based in Stonebridge Golf Club, which was just south of Birmingham. And I thought, brilliant, because as a community, Birmingham has a lot of Muslims. It would be a great place. So everything was falling into place. And we said, well, let's do a pilot session and let's just see what happens. And I was always asking Alistair, okay, how many weeks or months in advance do we need? And what does a good number look like? And he said, look, if we get anything between 6 to 12 women, that'd be fantastic. And, you know, you probably need a good couple of months to go out and just market it and get it in. And I said, okay, that's fine. And by now, I don't have a marketing machine. My marketing machine is just WhatsApp, right? That was literally it. So we've chosen a venue. We've got this great coach. We've got a date confirmed. And I think I sent out a message on Sunday night around 7 o'clock. And I kid you not, Gary, that within 12 hours, we had 40 women sign up and pay and say, we want to play golf. I was buzzing, right? Because my phone was now just, you know, I could see the registrations coming through. And it got to a point, I tell you about, at 9 o'clock, I had to stop messaging Alistair because I just didn't know as to what time he'd go to sleep. But I'm like, we've got a booking. And he's like, really? And I got up the next morning and I sent him an email straight away and say, by the way, I think we've just sold out. We've got X amount of women. And he was just, he couldn't believe it. He just absolutely couldn't believe it. He goes like, you what? And then I had to call him. And we were talking, we were just both really ecstatic at the fact that we've actually had people sign up, turn up, you know, and say they want to play.
So Alistair, what were you feeling at this point? Because this is this is new territory for you as well. I mean, what were some of the questions in your mind? Because it's interesting that there was such demand from these Muslim women. But, you know, in terms of some of the sensitivities that Amir has mentioned, you know, not least the dress code, how did you think you were going to manage this and kind of what was going through your mind beyond the excitement of the demand? What was going through your mind?
Like Amir says, I think the first thing I was thinking is, when is Amir going to stop messaging me? Because it was literally just, you know, just every few minutes we were getting these bookings. So like you say, it was really exciting. But then there was that other element of, okay, well, we've agreed to do this, but now all of a sudden it was very real. So Hannah and I had quite a few conversations as to, you know, how this was actually going to play out. And I think it's just important to say at this point, the relationship that we have with Amir, he enabled us to ask questions that we felt we should know the answers to, but we didn't. And I think that fundamentally is probably why we've got to where we've got to now, is that we've created a safe environment for the women to be able to enjoy their experience. But we've also created a safe environment for us and our coaches to be able to say to Amir and actually to Amir's wife as well, and, you know, just get lots of different perspectives here is, or actually, we don't want to get this wrong. We don't want to say the wrong thing. We don't want to be disrespectful. We should know some of these answers, but actually, Amir, we don't. So do you mind if we just ask you?
Yeah, and on that point, I mentioned the dress code because obviously, Amir, yeah, you know, kind of come to your mind, you know, is it possible for perhaps conservative Muslim women in full dress to be able to play golf? And equally, I guess, Alistair, you might have asked that same question. And isn't it funny that, you know, dress code is such a hot topic within golf generally? And here we are kind of almost kind of extending this to, you know, the boundaries of, or asking new questions about dress code. So what were the conversations that were going on between you? And also, frankly, you know, kind of what were you thinking that Stonebridge Golf Club might think, or other golf clubs might think, where you'd be, you know, bringing Muslim women to, you know, to experience golf for the first time?
From a dress sense, I think we wanted to know, I mean, some quite basic questions, really. You know, what would it be like to swing a golf club wearing hijab? Would that be possible? Would the women that came along to the event be comfortable wearing a Love Dot Golf cap on top of an hijab? You know, was that really sensitive? Should we perhaps not do that? And of course, Amir made it really clear right from the very beginning. Yeah, and I remember Amir saying this to me. He's like, Alistair, these are just women, right? If they want to wear a cap, they'll wear a cap. don't worry about it, but thanks for asking. And that's kind of the basis of where we've gone from there, really.
But I heard how Alistair was introducing it, right? It was just very clear that at the end of the day, the dress code is a barrier, right? And I think it's a ridiculous barrier because it's just, it's silly, right? Especially in today's modern day and age, what does it matter? As long as you respect the golf course, and by that, I mean, you wouldn't wear football boots to go and play golf in, right? Because you could obviously tear up the grass and it wouldn't be great for it. So does it matter if you wear jeans? Does it matter if you wear a skirt? And I just looked at it, I thought, as long as you can respect the game and the course and it doesn't prevent you from swinging the golf club, then it should be able to be comfortable to wear what you want. And I was also very conscious of the fact that if we put up certain restrictions, then we will drive people away because there is a big stigma attached to golf. Golf is seen as a sport played by only white, rich men. And now if we're taking this game with that perception to a community who are thinking there is no chance I would ever even be seen on a golf course or even allowed in one, if we turned around and said, you have to wear this, this and this to come, you can forget it, right? Because it's just like, well, I'm not going to do that. Why should I do that? And so when we spoke about it with Alistair, and I think what was also amazing with the team, with Alistair has got and all the coaches, is that they just are open and they are sincere. And just to have someone ask those questions from a genuine perspective means the world, especially from someone who comes from a minority background. And life is about learning. And I don't think ignorance is an excuse anymore, but you've got to ask questions, right? And if you ask sincerely, then of course people will give you time. And I think that's exactly what we've done. And I keep telling Alistair, I don't have all the answers, by the way, okay? I don't sit here and talk for Islam or Muslims or women in particular. I can only tell and part with you the knowledge that I've got. And if I don't have the answers, we will go and find them for you. But for me, it was just making these women feel absolutely safe, comfortable, just don't have a good time.
So you've got demand for this first session. What was that first session like? What happened when they turned up? Were they worried when they came into the golf club environment? But, you know, more importantly, what was it like out on the golf course? What was their first experience of golf like?
I think for me, you know, I got there nice and early, got to Stonebridge. I hadn't been to Stonebridge before on this mine, right? So everything I'm going on is purely trusting Hannah and Alistair's, you know, take on it, but got there nice and early. We then wanted to have a separate room because at the same time, what we didn't want to do was get women in an area where there was going to be free flowing alcohol, for example, right? Whether or not they would be drinking and whatnot, we were trying to remove all the barriers for someone to be upset or just say, to have a negative experience. And I have to say, Stonebridge were absolutely wonderful and accommodating, and not even accommodating, welcoming. They weren't doing us a favor. They wanted to be a part of something really special. And I think that's really, really important. Everyone from the management down to the staff were just incredible. And so we were very lucky that we were given a dedicated space to host these women. So that was great. And the weather was stunning. I still remember it because there's a video that we captured on it. The sun was shining. Everything was set for a perfect day. We had a registration desk outside. We even had signposts and doing it. In fact, I had my brother escorting people from the car park on a golf buggy to the registration desk because we just, as great as that sounds, but we were also acutely aware that as much as the golf club would have been on board, you can't account for every golf member or just members of the public that were going to come because, let's be honest, to see, you know, 15, 20, 30 women dressed differently, wearing a hijab and a abaya, as you know, these are things you wouldn't see on a golf club. It was going to raise eyebrows, right? But so we were also aware that, you know, we've got to make sure that journey from the moment they enter the car park to the moment they leave, we were accounted for. And again, I've got to stress how Alistair and Hannah would meticulously go through that process and think about it as to what's that experience look like. And so, yeah, I remember registering and getting these women signed up, and you could just see they were excited. They were nervous. They were like, really, we're going to play golf? I remember we had one lady who'd come off a night shift, okay, but because she was working for the NHS and she just wanted to be a part of it. There were people who had traveled 30, 35 minutes, you know, just to come out and do this. And everyone turned up. That was the other thing. And I was like, okay, I'm sure someone's just going to bottle it. They're not going to come, right? And I get that. But we're going through the register and everybody was present. And I was like, wow, okay, this is great. And we had the golf clubs lined up and, you know, we got everyone settled. We gave them some drinks. And then we just got them out and we did an introduction. And for me, that sort of 5-minute introduction was a moment of history because these were the first ever dedicated Muslim women were going to come and try an MGA Love.Golf taster session. And I made a point to that to them. I said, ladies, you are making history. It's because of you. If this goes anywhere, it's because of you, because you have been brave enough and bold enough to come out and say, we're going to give this a go. And you're setting the path for future events. And then Alistair did an introduction, described what was going to happen. And then I just took a back seat. And that was quite almost scary for me now, because these women have come. They've come because it's called the Muslim Golf Association. And then they see me, the Muslim guy, who's sort of, you know, okay, so he's the one who's responsible for this. And now I'm not there anymore. Okay. I've almost like let them go. It's like my flock. I've just said, okay. And I've handed them over now to Alistair and Hannah, and I've taken a back seat, and I'm just now observing really, really from afar. And it was amazing to see, because from the first shot, I saw smiles, I heard laughter, and it was incredible. And I was just like, wow. Okay. I don't think I could have pictured that. It was magical.
I was fortunate enough to attend and observe one of the sessions in Leicester in the summer. And I got the same impression. I was just amazed at the sense of enjoyment and excitement and, you know, the shot euphoria, people hitting, the women hitting shots and getting really excited and congratulating each other and really very, very free with the emotions. And Alistair, I wonder what it's been like. More than 550 Muslim women have been introduced to golf over the last few months, but actually 1,200 applied. There were more applicants than you could help this year. But what have these sessions been like? How are these women taking to golf, and what have their experiences been like?
I don't think we've ever seen anything like it before. I don't think I've ever been involved in a coaching program that has seen such an instant take up. And I've kind of experienced it from, luckily really, from a number of different angles, because I've coached in some of the sessions, but then I've tried not to get involved in some, so I can just observe and see what's going on. And I think, you know, it's really important that if this is about empowering women to play a sport, and in this case it's golf, then we should have female coaches leading and also pioneering. And that can't always be the case because of the number of female coaches that are involved in golf. But wherever possible, I think they really should lead. They become inspirational and aspirational. I think it's really important for the women to see that there are coaches delivering the sport. When I'm involved as observer, I mean, like Amir says, you see this initially, certainly, you know, some reservations and just not quite sure what to expect. And then from the moment that they can hit those first few shots, there is this, I mean, I think it's a collective joy where the whole atmosphere changes really quickly, just like it would do with any coaching session, really, if it's being delivered, I think, appropriately, is that there is just this sudden belief of, well, I can do this. I don't, you know, going back to my first observations 10 years ago, I don't need someone to tell me what to do. Actually, I can do it. And I don't need to worry about changing my clothes, and all of the equipment is here for me to use. So I'm just going to go for it. And that kind of collective joy is then kind of released throughout the group, and the coach just goes with it. But I think, you know, that's just like good coaching. You create an appropriate environment, and then you step back and you just let it go, and then just keep out of the way, because once it goes, you don't need to get involved now. It's happening, and it just happening right in front of you.
And both of you have spoken to numerous customers during this. Alistair, you've actually done some interviews after these events. When I was at the event in Leicester, I spoke to a couple of other women who were participating, both of whom are professional women. One is a business owner. One was a lawyer. And this kind of sense of, you know, kind of radiating excitement. And, you know, what was interesting, they were talking about the, you know, the green environment they were in as well, not just the sport, but the opportunity to come and be in a completely different environment. And Amir, I wonder if also, you know, there are learnings for us all in terms of projecting stereotypes onto Muslim women. I wonder if you'd say something about that, because I was very, very struck by the clientele that came to these events and the stories that they told about their personal circumstances, perhaps not what people might expect.
Unfortunately, Gad, there is a huge stigma attached to Muslims and Muslim women in particular, and especially if they are dressed in a particular way. There is a huge media bias that forms our opinion, right? It's part of the subconscious bias that we see. And a lot of the time, if you see a woman who's wearing a niqab and, you know, a black robe called an abaya, you automatically think the words terrorism, you think oppression, you think she's backwards, probably doesn't speak English, and all these other negative stereotypes that are attached to it, that you couldn't be further from the truth. And it's really sad. It's really sad to see that people form their opinions by what they hear and read. And in fact, what we have found that the women that have been coming are highly successful career women, professional women. We've had women from so many different industry sectors, whether that be as doctors, medics, professional services, consultancies. You mentioned the legal sector, the financial industry, across a wide range. And these are women who have now gone and climbed those career ladders, who are senior managers, directors, VPs of Fortune 500, global FTSE 200 organizations. And yet, you know, what was fascinating is that they too also felt a slight reservation. It wasn't when they heard about this event, it wasn't an instant, yeah, I'm there. There was a slight hesitation of, okay, what is it going to be like? And again, if you go onto the website and you have a look at it, you know, we've tried to answer and have an FAQ page of the common questions that we felt that may be asked. These events were never designed to be purely for Muslim women. The first question I always say to people is, I get asked as well, do I need to be? Of course you don't. We only ever ask people to respect the three key values, but there would be no alcohol, no gambling, and that there would be a safe place for people to pray. So if people respected that, regardless of what faith, religion you're from, everybody was welcome. But there was always hesitations on both parts. But, you know, I look at it and I think, actually, if a lady comes in wearing a niqab, why is that such an alien sight on a golf course? And it's because of our own negativity and stereotypes that we've been brought up with, when in fact, all it is another human being. It's another woman enjoying the outdoors, playing this wonderful game of golf. And as long as they're respecting the course and the game, why should it matter? That's going to take time to change, but we've got to start. And as you've said, you've witnessed it firsthand, is when they come, that euphoria, you either get it or you don't. And it's not, we don't have 100% success rate, okay? Because we know that golf isn't for everyone. But I've always said that once you've hit a ball and you've hit a good shot, if you get a sensation inside somewhere, then it's the beginning of the end. But if nothing happens and you don't get a little tickle, then it's fine. Then maybe golf isn't for you. Maybe, who knows? But, you know, they all do. And they absolutely love it, because they all want to know, how can we continue? And you know what? They don't just say, how can we continue? How can I get my children involved? How can I get my spouse, my partner involved? How can I get my friends involved? It's like, we want to spread this. Just, we don't want to do this alone. We want everyone to partake in it.
And Alistair, I mean, that's a great illustration. There'll be some lovely videos of the events, which any listeners can watch online. There was some fantastic newspaper coverage. There was a wonderful spread in the Guardian newspaper about the event that happened at Walton Heath Golf Club. So some really great media coverage, some great stories that are available to watch. But I wonder, Alistair, looking back over the summer and all the events, what learnings, what insights for you, what feelings you have looking back on what's been achieved in one season of doing this?
Well, I think it goes back to seeing the same things that when I first saw Love.Golf, really, is that we just have to listen to the customer and respond to their needs. The beauty that golf has is some of the things Amir touched on earlier. You know, other sports can't compete in this arena, because they can't just lay on an event and say to women, you know, you can wear what you like, you'll be outside, it will be a safe environment. Amir mentioned swimming earlier. That's just not going to be possible. Just because around, again, going back to dress code, just because of those, you know, swimming can say it has a women's only event, but then will it have female lifeguards? Will there be a viewing area where men are attending? It's difficult for swimming to adjust and to have an appropriate environment. Whereas golf doesn't need to adjust, it doesn't need to do anything. It's already there. If we can convey the message to the audience that there is an appropriate offer here, then it should be quite straightforward. But I think the critical bit is that golf can't just create events and say we're open for all or open to everybody and just expect groups to come, because they won't. It's going to need a lot more than that. It needs that actual invitation and that credibility and the And, you know, the passion within that invitation to encourage the women to come. But like we've seen already, when they do, and when we listen to what the customers are telling us and we respond accordingly, then we have something really special. And you know, this is just the first step. 1,200 sounds like quite a big number. And of course it is. But I honestly feel that it's a teeny, teeny number. And that if golf doesn't act now, we are missing a trick. Now is the time to really build upon this momentum and, you know, take it to the next level.
And this is one part of the business opportunity that Syngenta identified in its research, looking at a $35 billion opportunity globally to increase female participation. And Amir, I wonder what next for the Muslim Golf Association with Love.Golf? You've had a super busy year. Demand is there, but it could go even further. What are your hopes going forward from here?
I think one point I really want to highlight is that this works because of our two philosophies and methodologies. I'm a novice and an absolute infancy in the golf industry. In fact, I'm a non-existent entity, right? Whereas I have someone that I can lean on who is the guru, who is experienced, who's been there, done that, seen it. But more importantly, is very much research-led. It's not his opinion, okay? It's very much, actually, this is what the customer needs and going through it. And when we try and combine those two forces together, and for me, you know, I've deliberately called it the Muslim Golf Association because, yes, that is the initial target audience. However, there have never been any restrictions, as I've said before, both on the men, the women, children, whoever. But you've got to start somewhere. You've got to have a purpose for it. And when you talk about from a commerciality and a business perspective, there are 1.9 billion Muslims in the world. It's estimated that the Muslim economy is worth approximately 1.8 trillion pounds. Put that into context. And that's very much serving a community who are inspired by ethical needs of that population, because the faith itself isn't a something quite secular. It governs an individual's lifestyle. So whether that's got to do with marriage, that's got to do with business, or whether that's got to do with lifestyle, Islam governs all facets of it. So there's a natural synergy that when you look at sport and Islam, it goes hand in hand. It's not faith and sport, it's just a part of life. And so for me, my vision is that we take golf and we introduce golf to every single Muslim man, woman, and child. And that is my goal. We will take it one step at a time. We'll take it one country at a time. But why not? Because for me, that's my legacy. That's what I want to leave behind. And the other factor that I really want to highlight is disability, because disability is still seen as a taboo, even in the Muslim community. But again, I look at golf and it's one of the few sports that can really give a new lease of life to people. If this is what it's done just for women, can you imagine what it could do with people who are suffering from mental health issues or physical disabilities? But you give them the remedy of being outdoors and giving them a purpose to go and just be in that environment. It doesn't matter how you hit the ball. Who cares? We all know you spend your whole life trying to perfect the swing. So what does that matter? But if we can get golf as a vehicle to just bring goodness into people, then that's what it's about. So yeah, my ambition is we take this worldwide. We take it to every single Muslim man, woman, and child.
Alistair, for Love.Golf, both with events and growing participation in the Muslim community, but also the kind of the start of Love.Golf with increasing the number of women and families playing golf. What next for Love.Golf?
I think just to build upon the learnings, you know, we can see from these events that actually it's experiences, really. That's what people are really looking for. We've just delivered a series of experiences that create opportunities for women to really enjoy sport and feel good. So we just take the learnings from this and we just continue to build on it. It sounds really simple, doesn't it? But it's just all the time, just keep listening to the customer, building upon the insight, trying different things, seeing what works, build it a little bit more, shape it a little bit differently, perhaps take it to different countries, take it to different cultures, take it to different communities. And then I think that's from, you know, from the coaching side, but then also it's going to be really important now that we've started this, whether it's you know, like our MGA projects or our love.golf projects or projects that we do with other communities, what we can't ever do is go in, deliver something, and then just walk away. We're on this journey now for life. And, you know, we've said to all of the women that Amir and I have met is that we will support you come what may, forever and ever. And I really mean that. You know, that's not a cheesy quote. We learn from these women and then we continue to support them. And that might be, who knows, that, you know, we might have some of the women that have come to this event, they may wish to join a golf club. They may not. You know, we've had some younger girls come to these events. We might see them supporting our programs as volunteer coaches and going forwards in the future. We might have women that think, yeah, I wouldn't mind coming to do that again, and I'll bring friends and I'll do it in a 2 or 3 months time, but I want to do it my way. And we just need to support all of those as we go forward. So I think that's probably a really complex answer to a really simple question, but just keep building upon the experiences, really, and create them and make them bigger and better as we move forwards.
Amir, final thought from you?
I think it's been an unbelievable roller coaster. What started off as an idea, and just I wondered if Muslims would even play this game, to be where we are, 1,200 women will say they want to play golf, over 300 men playing golf, is absolutely incredible. But at the same time, I know for a fact that this couldn't have happened if it wasn't for love.golf, if it wasn't for Syngenta, and all our supporting sponsors and partners who've been brave enough to say, you know what, we believe in this and we are going to support you in any shape or form. You know, my job is I'm still a full-time recruiter for my business called Page Group, who have been absolutely amazing in the support that they've given and encouraged me to go out and actually fulfill this ambition, but also make an impact in people's lives. And I think together we are changing people's life through the power of golf. And I think that's probably the underlying message, is that golf can change people's lives for the better, and we're just facilitators and we just want to keep doing this.
Well, Amir Malik from the Muslim Golf Association and Alistair Spink from love.golf, thank you very much for speaking to Syngenta Growing Golf.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you.
Thank you to Amir Malik and Alistair Spink. I was inspired to hear about Amir's upbringing, his passion for golf, and his ambition to take the game to Muslim communities worldwide. Alistair's approach using customer insights is simple yet powerful. It shows there are opportunities for golf when we understand what customers want. If you'd like to comment, share an experience, or ask a question, please do get in touch at syngentagolf.com or via Twitter and LinkedIn. Until next time, goodbye.